that their souls were covered by male dress. But now they became female, which means that their dress was changed. The soul, however, remains the same. It is said that by modern medical treatment, a male can be transformed into a female and a female into a male. The body, however, has no connection with the soul. The body can be changed either in this life or the next. Therefore, one who has knowledge of the soul and how the soul transmigrates from one body to another does not pay attention to the body, which is, nothing but a covering dress. Panditaha samadarshina. Such a person sees the soul, which is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he's a samadarshi, a learned person. Text 34. Sudyumna had been transformed into the best of beautiful women who excite sexual desire and was surrounded by other women. Upon seeing this beautiful woman loitering near his ashram, Buddha, the son of the moon, immediately desired to enjoy her. 35. The beautiful woman also desired to accept Buddha, the son of the king of the moon, as her husband. Thus Buddha begot in her womb a son named Pururava. 36. I heard from reliable sources that King Sudyumna, the son of Manu, having thus achieved femininity, remembered his familial spiritual master, Vasishta. 37. Upon seeing Sudyumna's deplorable condition, Vasishta was very much aggrieved. Desiring for Sudyumna to regain his maleness, Vasishta again began to worship Lord Shankara, Shiva. 38 and 9. O King Parikit, Lord Shiva was pleased with Vasishta. Therefore, to satisfy him and keep his own word to Parvati, Lord Shiva said to that saintly person, your disciple Sudyumna may remain a male for 1 month and a female for the next. In this way, he may rule the world as he likes. Purport. The word Gotrajaha is significant in this connection. Brahmanas generally act as spiritual masters of two dynasties. One is their disciplic succession, and the other is the dynasty born of their semen. Both descendants belong to the same gotra, or dynasty. In the Vedic system, we sometimes find that both brahmanas and kshatriyas and even vaishyas come in the disciplic succession of the same rishis. Because the gotra and dynasty are one, there's no difference between the disciples and the family born of the semen. The same system prevails in Indian society, especially with regard to marriage, for which the gotra is calculated. Here, the word gotraja refers to those born in the same dynasty, whether they be disciples or members of the family. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim jatkrapatamaham bande shri gurun dinataranam. Nama om Vishnu padaya krishna preshtaya bhutale srimate bhaktivedanta swaminiti namane. Namaste sarasvati deve gauravani pracharini nirvishesha shunyavadi paschati desha tarane. Pancha kalpaturubhyascha kripasindhobhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namo. So it worked. From that moment, no other male ever entered the forest. Just imagine the frat boys. Dude, if you sneak into the sorority house after hours, you become like a chick. Whoa, no way. It'll keep them out. If you had something like, that would be, if we put something like that at the border, you cross the border illegally and, you get switched genders, it might work. Might make everybody, well, not everybody happy. Might make some of the people in Arizona happy. So, this worked. Now, yesterday, again, Gautama Prabhu talked about this as a kind of a transgendered issue, but actually it's not, because transgender means somebody who's living across genders. Someone with a man's mind in a woman's body or vice versa. But this is a completely different thing. This is completely gender bending, worthy of a science fiction novel by Ursula K. Le Guin or Octavia Butler or somebody. This is somebody who actually became Streetva. Where's the word? That's, Streetvam, anyway, is the word. His womanness. He actually became a woman. This is somebody who became a woman in a woman's body. And what's the evidence? When Buddha started making eyes at her, she made eyes right back. And they conceived a child. She, as much as he wanted her, as much as he desired her, she desired him. So this isn't actually a case of trend. This is something even more extreme. And, as it turns out, he gets to switch back and forth month by month. I'm a little curious to see how the pregnancy progresses in that. But he gets to switch back month, alternate months. 1 month as a man and 1 month as a woman. So Shiva's order, his promise to Parvati is held sacred, but at the same time, Sudyumna's integrity is, at least to some extent, maintained. And there was a little discussion yesterday how to deal with, say, transgendered people as devotees. And the thing is, this is an identity crisis. So we deal with it like any other identity crisis. On the soap operas, you may have somebody who realizes, that he or she isn't a member of the whoever the rich family that owns the whole town is, and they grew up as the spoiled scion of this rich family, and all of a sudden they find out that they were sold to the rich family by somebody from the wrong side of the tracks because the rich family couldn't have a baby, and the other people really needed money or something. One of the other kids needed some kind of heart replacement operation or something. And then this person is confronted with an identity crisis. Who am I? Am I a Van Hootsit or a Smith? If anybody's ever watched soap opera time is time slowed down by about a factor of a million. The storylines progress glacially slowly. So here's this person dealing with this identity crisis in slow motion over a period of months or years, trying to figure out who he or she is. So this identity crisis, whether it's someone who's homosexual or transgendered or in a complete gender-bending situation like this, can be dealt with in the same way that all of our identity crises are dealt with. Tulsi Priya suggested strong preaching. I would say strong preaching based on empathy. Because we can only really preach as effectively as we identify with the other person's problem. And this is not a matter of sympathy. Sympathy means compassion, feeling with. Empathy means feeling into. Means you can identify with the other person's situation. You can imagine what it would be like. Because after all, it's just a different and maybe more intense. Of course, all of our problems seem particularly intense. Whatever is going on in my mind is naturally the center of the world. It's amazing that people have all these other problems going on out here because I've got something going on in my mind. I don't know how they have time to worry about all their little petty problems when I'm concerned about this. But it's actually just simply another variety of the same problem. And we can best help them when we identify. If we're going to give, we were talking about this last week as well. If you're going to give somebody instruction, if you're going to correct somebody, it'll be most effective if the correction or suggestion or whatever is given in a way that's consonant with your relationship with that person. If it's somebody I don't know, it's really strange for me to walk up and just say, well, you can't be doing such and such a thing. That's just wrong. The person goes, who's this old coot? What's his problem? Losing his mind. Losing his memory, losing his mind. Going around yelling at people all over the place. Who does he think he is? Well, that's the question. Come back to that in a minute. But If you can actually identify with that person's problem, then you might be able to help them. Because they'll feel that. They'll feel that you feel them. So then you can, you know, based on the degree of your empathy, you can do that. I mean, what is it, Chanakya Pandit? And this isn't high philosophy, this is a Niti Shastra. Panditji, Niti means common wisdom, right? Conventional wisdom. This is like how you get along in the material world. This isn't high philosophy. Matrivat paradareshu, paradravyeshu loshtavat, atmavat starvabhuteshu, yapashati sapandita. What does it mean to be wise? Matrivat paradareshu. Paradareshu, other people's wives? Matrivat, mother. Not for me. Right? No touch. Paradravyani loshtavat. Other people's stuff? Garbage in the gutter. You want to pick up some garbage from the gutter? Take it home? Put it up on the mantle? I don't think so. However, atmavat sarvabhuteshu. You do identify with their suffering. Exactly. That's empathy. That's beyond compassion is amazing. A religious scholar, Karen Armstrong, is suggesting compassion as kind of the core of religion. And she makes a lot of this etymology of compassion, feeling with, compassione. And that's a wonderful thing. It's the golden rule, right? And it's the, you know, it's, and that is actually the essence of paradukkha-dukkhi. You actually experience the other's misery. Empathy is like pity. Oh, I feel sorry for you. Your life really stinks. And that's just really, I'm really sorry for, I wish there were some way I could help you. Empathy is, how do the young people say it? I feel you, brother. Right? I feel you. But you actually have to feel it, because they won't feel it back if you don't actually feel it. So if we have that kind of compassion, that kind of empathy, that kind of beyond compassion, that feeling into being with them, then we can help them. Because after all, that what they're going through is actually just a different variety of identity crisis. I also have an identity crisis. I think I'm a white, heterosexual, 62-year-old male with some English degrees and, you know, who teaches college English and who has a connection with this woman I have some claim on this woman. She's my wife. And I have some claim on these two other women because they're my daughters and there's my grandson. Isn't he the cutest thing in the world? I've got an identity crisis because guess what? I think I've got some claim on this woman. I've been married 37 and a half years, something like that. 38 years ago, I didn't know she existed. She didn't know I existed. So how deep is that claim? And guess what? 38 years from now, very few people will even remember either of us, much less us remembering each other. It feels now like we're soulmates. But all it takes is for one of those chest pains to actually turn out to be a real heart attack, and the relationship is pretty much shot. So I've got an identity crisis. Oh, I've got another identity crisis. I think I'm a Brahmin. I think I'm the guy who's qualified to sit here and give class. That's a big problem. I mean, these are all big problems because those are not who I am. And unless we see all those things as problems, we haven't attained what Srila Prabhupada calls the perfection of human life. So when Sanatan Goswami approached Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had one question, well, a couple of questions. Kayami, who am I? Who am I? Why am I tortured by these different kinds of miseries? And because I, you know, in such a confused state of life, how can I get any benefit? How can anything I figure out do anyone any good? Who am I? And that is actually the question anyway. I mean, that's the essential question. Who are you? Who do you think you are anyway? Right? We get busted by our parents, going through dad's sock drawer where he kept his change or something, you know. Who do you think you are anyway, going through my sock drawer? That's actually the essential question. Until we've come to that question, we're not really fully human, because we're too much controlled by animal impulses. And what was Mahaprabhu's response? Jiver swupahoy krishnair nityadas. Mahaprabhu himself gave an example how we can identify ourselves, how we can resolve the identity crisis. We can't do this artificially, but we do it, if we must, kram bikram, step by step, but it's only going to happen in good association. He showed us at Ratayatra. Na hungripo nacha narapatir, na bi vaishyo nashudro, na hungvarni nacha grihapatir, navanasto yatirva. I'm not even any of these things. Na hungripo, I'm not a brahmana. Na hungripo nacha narapatir, I'm not a master of men, I'm not a kshatriya. Nacha vaishyo nashudro, I'm not a vaishya, not a shudra. Nahumvarni, I'm not a brahmachari or any of the Nahumvarni, not a grihapatir, I'm not the master of any house, not a householder. Navanasto, not a person who stays in the forest. Yatirva, not even a yati. Who am I then? So we define things, we can define things in two ways, what it's not and what it is. In Sanskrit, that's the tatastha lakshana and swarupa lakshana. So the tatastha lakshana is nahum vipro nacha narapatir, naapi vaishya nashudra, nahum varni nacha gurupatir, no navanasto yatirva. Okay, so then what? Kintu proti nikila paramananda purnamritabde gopi bhartupada kamalaya dasa dasa anudasa. I am the servant of those who serve the lotus feet of Prodhyan, that brilliant Paramananda Purnamritabde, Nikhila Paramananda, the source of all the bliss in the universe, Purnamritabde, the ocean of nectar, who is the master of the gopis. I am the servant of those who see themselves as the servant of his lotus feet. So that's how we resolve our identity crisis. Rather than identifying with one caste or one gender or another, or a couple in this case, or a particular job, I mean, we don't resolve our gender crisis by or any identity crisis necessarily by finding another job. Sometimes those things may help, but the ultimate resolution, now in the meantime, we may have to make some other adjustments, and people who are actually empathetic may find ways to accommodate us. And it's good if we find company, the company of people who are a little more advanced than we are, kind of have a similar mood, at least they understand where we're coming from, and are affectionate. That's what's meant by association of devotees. Talked about that before. So some other accommodations may need to be made in the meantime. It's going to be a little awkward from time to time. It's going to be a little awkward, maybe a lot of the time, or most of the time. But the ultimate resolution only comes when we identify with the right family. Srila Prabhupada talks about that in this last purport. Gotra. And which gotra should we identify with? Should I identify with the Reeds? Should I identify with the people who were part of the Revolutionary War and signed the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution? You look into them a little bit, they weren't all that cool. Weren't even all that enthusiastic of George Reed, who's one of my ancestors who signed the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. He wasn't exactly a loyalist, but he wasn't a fire-eyed revolutionary either. Not somebody to be super proud of, not to speak of all his other habits. Do I identify with them? Do I identify with a school that I'm teaching at? Do I identify with my car? I've seen that happen. I remember I had a new car a few years ago, my only new car. About 6 months after I got this new car, somebody waved me through an intersection that I should not have crossed, like a four-lane intersection, and a plumbing truck was coming up the outside lane. And I couldn't see it because you got SUV. I'm in a Saturn, which is kind of low. And, you know, you've got SUVs and vans and all these things. So there's this plumbing truck. This is a truck loaded with pipes and heavy, monkey wrenches and stuff. This is a heavy truck right into my car. I got a, oh, my God, what have you done to me? I mean, I'm somebody who should have known better. But here I was feeling my car. So what do I identify with? What Gotra do I identify with? Maharaj? This is especially this for the sannyasis, but actually it's for all of us. Achyuta Gotra. We should identify with as part of Krishna's family. I've sometimes heard pujaris before they do a fire sacrifice, like for a wedding or something like that, when they're chanting, kind of invoking auspiciousness for the people in the fire sacrifice. They're there to be identified by their gotra. And I remember hearing Dharma Setu in San Diego, refer to them as a member of the Achyuta Gotra. Why? Because they're initiated into Krishna's family. Krishna says, Lord Chaitanya says, Dikshakale Bhakta Kori Atma Samarpana. When somebody accepts initiation, when somebody actually begins the process of Atma Samarpana, surrendering his soul or her soul to Krishna, Krishna accepts that person as being as good as himself. He accepts their body as Chidanandamoy, being made of eternal substance and eternal knowledge and bliss. So that's how we should, if we learn to identify ourselves. So enough, we're going to help somebody. We first of all have to feel their situation. How hard is that? But we came from a place where we were deeply rooted in the material world. And when I met the devotees, I was a surfer, just in the middle of getting thrown out of the Navy, because of some questionable association and activities. And I kind of felt like that. This is who I am. I'm Bill. I live in the jungle in Waikiki. The jungle wasn't like a jungle. It was kind of a thickly populated part of Waikiki. A lot of hippies lived there at the time, late 60s. Live in the jungle by the Alawai Canal, and I'm a South Shore surfer, not really strong enough to be a North Shore surfer. I'm this and that, and I look like this, and that's who I am. And the devotees helped me because they felt me. They were able to gradually help me begin to move out of that sense of who I was. And if we can feel the other person's situation, actually experience it with them, or at least imagine it, takes a little stretch of the imagination. But that's not an unhealthy thing. If we can actually imagine the other person's situation and see how it's actually pretty much analogous to the situation that I was in 40-some years ago, then we might be able to actually help move them, because they'll be drawn by the authenticity of our own spiritual experience, as fundamental as it may be, as basic as it may be. We may not be very advanced, but if we're actually convinced, if we're actually making some progress, then other people will see that, and they'll say, oh, this guy is not perfect. You live with him in the temple for a little while and you find out, yeah, he's still sometimes a jerk. Still gets upset easily, or he still gets depressed, or he still gets, wants to go out and have hot apple turnovers at the Rainbow Drive-In on Kapahulu or something like that. So many, but he's working on it. He's in the shower, give him that much. And he's actually got the soap and the loofah out. So that actually will move them. If they see your authentic spiritual experience, even though we may not be particularly advanced. And if they see that we're actually progressing, that'll give them courage. It'll give them heart. And in the meantime, we have to maintain good association with people who can feel our situation and who are a little more at least a little more advanced than we are, and who are affectionately disposed toward us. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. If we look at the seven purposes that Srila Prabhupada, and these are the same, essentially the same purposes he had when he formed the League of Devotee in Jhansi, we see what we what the focus of our activity should be as members of a spiritual society. And we understand these are actually the goals of not just this particular institution, but the entire family of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. And we figure out how we can work to advance those goals. But in the meantime, you know, we have to resolve our own identity crisis, or at least work on it, and do whatever we can to actually help people resolve theirs, whatever variety of identity crisis they may be experiencing. Because whatever the situation they're in now, we see here, it'll change. Prabhupada says, either in this life or another. Yuga Kishore was just pointing out, you don't have to necessarily die to, you know, to change bodies, to change genders. Here it's happening right in, and you don't necessarily have to go through all these operations that Prabhupada refers to in this in the purport. There might be more subtle, less painful, and maybe less expensive ways to deal with these things. But the ultimate way to deal with it is to actually resolve the identity crisis. Sometimes we used to go preach at the Hawaii State Hospital in Kaneohe. And we would preach to the doctors and staff at least as much as we did to the inmates, because we saw that their problems were just as bad. They just figured they had ways to kind of cope with them, to kind of gloss them over. But the thing is, as long as somebody thinks he's Napoleon or President Kennedy or something like that, he's going to create disturbance when it goes out into society. So he's got to, you know, the people have to figure out a way to deal with that identity crisis somehow or other, so they can actually fit in with polite society. So if we want to fit in with the society, fit in well with the society of devotees, we also need to be working seriously on resolving our identity crisis, because whatever it is right now, it's going to change. 70 years ago, who knows who or what I was. 70 years from now, going to be completely different all over again. So these things change. If we identify too strongly with these things, we're going to come across a crisis, whether we're in a soap opera or not. Bandita Samadarshan. So, Atmavat Sarva Bhuteshu Yapashyati Sapanditaha. If you actually can identify, you don't want to identify with the other person's wife, you don't want to identify with the other person's stuff, these things cause problems. But if you identify with their suffering, Atmavat Sarva Bhuteshu, you become one with them, then you're considered to be a wise person in your opinion. That's how we get this kind of samadarshan, how we become a samadarshan. Comments or questions? First or last? Because it'll be a disquisition on empathy, I expect. Lakshmi Narasimha Prabhu?
Would you agree that there is some danger in the approaching a person and trying to feel empathetic, but having the mindset that you're not your body and all your problems are caused by the fact that you identify with your body. Would you say there could be some danger or some impediment in terms of actually becoming empathetic towards a person?
Not if you have a good memory. Because, I mean, it's easy to become empathetic because I have the same problems. Because I also, either now to some extent, at least to some extent, or not so long ago, identified with this body. So if we actually understand how deep that problem is and how awkward it can be to move, especially if we try to move somebody too swiftly from that. If somebody all of a sudden hates their mother. Oh, my mother, I remember hearing a lecture once where, when I was quite new, probably 1970, Gorsundar would make a deal with us. If we didn't talk during prasadam, which meant if we didn't talk nonsense, which is what we pretty much would generate to because we're all pretty new, we didn't talk during prasadam, he would play a Prabhupada lecture. So I remember during one lecture, the question and answer session, somebody asked Prabhupada, how do we know if somebody's a demon? And his answer, they eat meat. Oh my gosh, that's mom. I knew my dad. I know my dad's kind of a demon, but kind of a jerk, but mom? So, if we try, but if we actually kind of bring them along as we would like to be brought along, then there's less danger. I mean, we actually have to feel into. And if the depth of our own conviction is what's going to act on it. That's what's going to be the catalyst. So, I'm inferring that the danger you refer to, that you allude to, might be being too aloof. Oh, you're not the body. What's your problem? But the thing is, if our memory is still pretty good, and most of us are still not quite so old that we can't remember. Ganagami was talking yesterday, how he was speaking with an old friend of his, and it's just like yesterday, those days in Tallahassee. Where did all those years go? It wasn't really all that long ago that we were completely admired up beyond our chin, and sometimes even deeper over our head in identifying with the body. And to the extent that we understand it either theoretically or by practical realization, we will be able to help people. But we have to actually remember, that's me. Atmavat sarvabhuteshu. That's me. I'm suffering, that person's suffering, and what's the difference? I met the devotees. I somehow or other, I accidentally bumped into a touchstone. And I'm gradually becoming a person, a real person, a whole person. But we have to do it carefully. If it's about converting somebody into joining my church and getting some points back at the temple or something like that, same thing with our book distribution. I have one friend, he was an astounding book distributor, and when he talks about it, he says he was actually, he would listen, he'd ask some questions, listen to the person and kind of feel where they were coming at, and coming from, and then he would use that. You'd find something in their experience that would elicit a desire in them to take that book home. It's not a matter of just saying, I feel you, man. But we have to actually feel, and it's not that hard if we actually just remember. So many people may say I'm big shot devotee right now, but I know when I go home where I'm at, when I'm in the car. So it's sometimes just a matter of just having a long enough memory to understand, to understand that, this person is this. This person's suffering is identical with my suffering. We're really the same. Is that okay? Kind of okay. Anything? Do you have any other ideas?
I don't exactly have an answer, but what I wrestle with, using that word aloof seems to have followed me my whole life as far as, reaction to situations. And empathy, feeling for a person, it seems like the danger, what I'm referring to is the danger of having the mindset that you're not your body and understanding that is the solution, is that you, I won't say you, I will say me, it seems like you always, me, I fast forward to the solution. And the in-between of actually understanding what that person is going through and feeling, genuinely feeling sad or, feeling their pain and something like that sometimes gets lost in that fast-forwarding experience. In other words, so that's why I asked that question. Is there a danger? Because, in our training as devotees, we get an extensive amount of training in lofty philosophy, which provides answers. But due to our own, and I'll say my own imperfections and defects as a human being, that sometimes is implemented without cultivating or developing an effective listening ability that has me fast forward to the solution, and thus the genuineness of my empathy seems not to be there.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying the danger.
Yeah. That's something. So we need to work on that. We need to associate with those who. If we associate with people who are paradukkha-dukkhi, and Srila Prabhupada came and lived among us. Everybody told him not to. It was just crazy, right? But he came to the Lower East Side, and lived among us, among people we wouldn't hang out with, for goodness sake. And he was, he was able to find way, just like the guy who won, the drunkard who wandered in with the roll of toilet paper that he copped somewhere. Prabhupada accepted it. He didn't tell him, look, you're not that body, you shouldn't be drinking, you should follow the four regular principles, mudha. But he accepted that, trying to create some sukriti for that person so that he could eventually come to the position where he could. And Brahmananda showed him a picture of his girlfriend that he met in India. Prabhupada didn't say, oh, this is girlfriend business is maya. you should become a celibate monk. He took a look at the picture and she says, eh, it's not that pretty. Which according to Brahmananda, was just exactly the right thing. Yeah, it's okay, but... He's feeling his situation. It doesn't have to exactly be the same person, but he understands where he's at, and he's just trying to nudge him out a little bit. That's all. They didn't say, wow, because that wouldn't have, if he said, oh, you should, back to Calcutta and hook up with her right away, that wouldn't have been the best thing. But he knew just exactly how to, he knew just exactly where the frets were and just which notes to play on the strings. And like a kendra, you just didn't have to think about it. It all feels the guitar, So it's an art. And it's something that, we need to work on. But Srila Prabhupada was the example. When my friend Tarun Kanti and I came to see him in 73, after everything in Hawaii closed down, Prabhupada didn't say, oh, you're from Hawaii. As others did. Oh, you're from Hawaii, you must be in Maya. You must not love Prabhupada and Krishna. You're from Hawaii, you must be following Siddhartha. Never mind, I was living in the temple when way before Siddhartha, before Siddhartha was even accepted as a human being by the people in ISKCON. Some people had that attitude. And Prabhupada's attitude was, how are you doing? You're still chanting, you're still associating with devotees, kind of taking our temperature. You're still with us? Okay. And then, what has happened to Gaur Sundar? Why has he gone away? What can we do to help him? Which was kind of strange for us because, well, that was the question we came to ask him. What's happened to Gaur Sundar? Why is he gone? So he could feel where we were, and he just kind of just made sure that, you know, kept the reins and checked it, you know, checked the reins a little bit. Keep us close. It's a tricky thing. We have to be real. We have to actually represent the Achyuta Gotra. Atmadan Mohan Prabhu?
I was just thinking back on the identity situation. When we listen to class, this goodness, it gives us a clear perspective and we can reset our identity. But there's the modes are always competing for which one that you're going to listen to. And sometimes when the mode of passion jumps back up, which is fairly regular in my life, then this knowledge gets eclipsed again and the identity switches. So this, it appears that the service that one needs to do, a certain degree of austerity, which is the wealth of the Brahminical culture, Brahminical order, is required in order to keep the mode of passion from snapping your identity back to the bodily conception of life. And that appears to be where the rubber meets the road. Everybody has a certain degree of austerity that's in their service attitude to keep the mode of passion from just jumping back in again. And then, no matter how much knowledge you have, if the mode of passion bumps in there, it comes like a snap, and it just takes, it has a whole platform of activities and identities that just comes immediately. So I'm just wondering how it is to stay stable with that situation.
Well, if it's a matter of resetting your identity, the answer, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. If we engage in Sri Krishna Sankirtan, that trumps all of it. If we actually immerse ourselves in that. Because what's the first effect? Vyasuna was talking about the seven effects the other day. What's the first effect of engaging in Sri Krishna Sankirtan? Cheto Darpana Marjana. The mirror of the heart becomes cleansed. So we get a clearer picture of who we really are. Progressively clearer picture of who we really are. I don't use a razor to clean my mirror, but... Pardon me?
It says that you can shave and the sword of knowledge, you can shave and get a nice clean shave, but if there's a little inattention while you're using your razor, then immediately there can be blood. What would that analogy referring to?
So it seems like we're mixing metaphors.
A little bit.
I don't use a razor to clean my mirror. I use a cloth or something.
Kirtanya Sadahari.
Yeah, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. I mean, if we actually engage in chanting and try to chant progressively without offenses, then eventually our sense of who we are becomes progressively refined. If we're not attentive, of course, it's not going to happen.
So we're dependent more or
less. Why not just teach your parrot to chant Hare Krishna and let him or her do the chanting for you? So if the question is a matter of resetting our identity, it's Kirtaniya Sadahari. Because Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. Because the chanting of the holy name actually resolves all these things.
But it's the reciprocation, correct? From the we can't do it really on our own. It's Krishna's blessing us with his understanding of our identity. From him comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So it has, as you're pointing out, it has to do with the quality of your chanting.
Well, we can't do it on our own because it's saṅkīrtanam. It's not samyak. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that kirtan alone is saṅkīrtan when everyone is chanting.
I was referring to Krishna's interacting with us. To change our identity like that is his mercy. That his reciprocation with us to be able to stay focused.
Well, because we're getting his association if we're actually chanting nicely.
But it's
but we can keep. Well, the thing is, we improve our chanting by maintaining association with devotees who are a little more committed than we are, who understand us and who are affectionately disposed toward us. That's Krishna's mercy. That association to devotees, that's Krishna's mercy. And that's how he shows us. He hasn't, walked up to me with a new ID card. Yes, ma'am? The last word?
I tried. I told her no, but she's insisting.
She apparently has a mind of her own.
I think I agree with what you're saying.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I understand it completely. When I think about the quintessential relationship between guru and disciple, I think of Krishna and Arjuna in the battlefield. And in one sense, we all replicate that in small ways. And obviously, Krishna and Arjuna started off as friends before they were guru and disciple. So it seems that, you know, if we start off as friends with people, then it's easier to give them, you know, to help them. But I also think that we are in a battlefield, and sometimes you don't have time for friendship, and sometimes you have to do triage, and, you know, somebody's bleeding or got a broken leg and whatever, and then what? You know, there may not be a whole lot of time. I'm speaking in very, maybe vague, metaphorical terms, but Naranta Prabhu made the point when he was here that everybody has their own style. And I've seen devotees that I think are completely obnoxious, and they go and drop the bomb on somebody, and that person doesn't like it at first. And, you know, a year, 2 years, whatever later, I can count myself among those type of people dealing with devotees who were not nice, not pleasant, not polite, not this, not that. But they drop the bomb and, you know, sometime later it did its work. So I'm just thinking that I was thinking that empathy is good for making friendships with people, but I think at some point, at all costs, you have to drop the bomb if you need to, and let, you know, let Krishna sort them out, as they say in the Marines or whatever.
You want to kill them or save them?
But I don't think strong preaching necessarily equates with rudeness or bad manners or meanness or unkindness. Somebody told me once that a devotee was speaking to a black-bodied person and said, you know, all this racial differences is just skin disease. And the person took offense, thinking he was saying that because you're black, you're diseased. You know, that was his misunderstanding. But I just think, you know, at some point, I've been chastised or corrected or accused of being a bad preacher because I was trying to empathize. You know, I was sitting around talking with girls, you know, saying, oh, you know, when you get married or this, that, or the other thing, and, you know, it was reported back, and it's like, oh, you know, you're just talking nonsense. And this is a person, you know, anyways, I could go on. But I just think sometimes, you know, how do you, I guess like you say, it's an art. You have to make the distinction, but from my point of view, sometimes you just have to give people what you've got and let them, you know, they may not like it right away, but hopefully later on they'll get some good out of it.
Okay.
You can comment on that if you like. I'm just...
Okay.
I'm trying to understand, you know...
It's an art and a science.
Yes.
It's very complex. It's not mechanical. It's not mechanical. I mean, we're actually... If the devotee is actually padadukaduki, if he really feels their misery, he's got to do something about it. got to do something about it. Now, some people may be triage whatevers, and other people may be surgeons, and I mean, you know, it's not everybody's doing the same thing. And I think the battlefield analogy is carried too far sometimes. You know, so, you know, Prabhupada made a joke once in a, not a joke, it was kind of, it was a comment in a lecture, and it was kind of, became kind of the focus of a, well, the lecture was used as a Back to Godhead article. You know, no time, sir, I don't have any time for you, sir. And so if we don't have any time for them, they're going to feel that too. So, you, I mean, each of us has to figure out how we're going to, you know, how we're going to apply that. I mean, the real thing is, first of all, we've got to resolve our own identity crisis. And we have to do it in a way, as Lakshmi Narasimha Prabhu points out, we have to do it in a way that we don't lose our sense of identity with the people who are still suffering from that identity crisis, and that we can actually help them. We want to draw them out. We don't want to kill them. We want to help them. We go out there, you know, to do whatever we can, you know, to help them. So we find, and as Narantra has, Narantra's preaching is very different from somebody. I mean, Narantra's preaching is very different from Varshana Maharaj, and which is very different from Lakshmi, which is very different from Madame Mohan Prabhu. Oh, so paradukha dukhi is just a catchphrase. That identifies the character of the devotee. That's an essential part of the devotee's character, is that they do feel the other person's. Just as Krishna feels it, they feel it. And it's not a pose. And we have to be real. This is me I'm speaking to, because it's and if we are posers, people pick up on that. If you don't have a sense of how they're suffering, if it's all completely mechanical to you, how can you really help them? If somebody's having a heart attack, part of what the heart attack experience is a sense of doom and panic. Oh my God, the world is coming to an end. And you have to be able to reassure them, it's going to be okay. Here, take another shot of nitro. Lift your tongue up. Psst. You have to be able to do both at the same time. How's that identifying? Because you understand what that person is going through. You're educated deeply enough in what it's like to have a heart attack, that when somebody's having a heart attack, or somebody has their bones and internal organs crushed in a car wreck or something like that, that you have a sense of how intense that pain is, or how intense that person's panic is. And at the same time, you have to be cool and reassure them. Give them the medicine. You know, give them the extra shot of nitro, and whatever it is you have to do. You have to be able to do both. It's an art and a science. It's not mechanical. It's about being real, being who we really are. And if we're really lovers, if we really love them, we figure, I'm not saying I figured out how to do this. You know, if I had actually figured out how to do this, I'd have 6,500 disciples all over the world. Because everybody who's ever come through one of my college English classes would have said, oh my God, I want to be just like him. Those people who have said, oh my God, I just want to be like him, they said, oh, I want to be what you are. Oh, what's that? A semiotician. Oh my God. You know, take me out back and shoot me. It can be fun, but it's not who I am. It's just a way to mess with people, semiotics. So, I mean, if I'd figured it out, but that's kind of what it is, and I'm kind of looking at it from the outside trying to figure it in. Each of us has our own way. You know, some of us have been around 40-some-odd years trying to figure out, how am I going to become Krishna conscious, and how am I going to become Krishna conscious enough that I can share it with other, really share it with other people, because that's what I got from Srila Prabhupada. And we're trying to figure it out, and we look like a bunch of goofy people trying to, you know, somebody with their, you know, with their idea, and somebody else has a different approach, and, you know, there's 4,000 of us running around of Prabhupada's disciples, and then their disciples, goodness knows how many people, and everybody's trying it, you know, trying to figure out, and we get together, and we kind of bounce ideas off each other. Dushyanti charamanticha. You know, and that's our pleasure. But it's really about becoming who we are. but you're going to, if you ask me another question, you're going to get me in an awful lot of trouble. And Yuga Lakishore as well, because he's going to be getting all kinds of emails. It's tricky. I'm not saying it's not, I mean, that's kind of how I started out. It's a tricky balance. Lakshmi Narasinghe, the word he used is dangerous. There's some danger that you can either be too aloof or that you become too involved and become drawn into their little drama. The danger's there. So you can save yourself from one danger by kind of leaning back and becoming aloof. Or you don't want to be too aloof, so you kind of get involved in their drama, hoping that perhaps the association of devotees will draw you back out. And the other person will appreciate the risk you took. Prabhupada's risk was not superficial, and it wasn't minor. Mrs. Morarji. You can't go there, you crazy old man, you'll die. But he did. And he came here for me and you and all of us. Thank you so much for your patience and your wonderful questions. Much to discuss.